The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
Now, welcome back. Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent in studio. After 8 o'clock, we're talking rugby, and then Pat Nevin will join us in the football show. We'll keep you updated, obviously, on events at Old Trafford. That gets underway at 8 o'clock. Dan, John Delaney, the statement came through on Saturday evening, very short and to the point. The board of the FAI announces the resignation with immediate effect of Executive Vice President and former CEO John Delaney. This follows talks between the parties. The FAI will fulfil certain notice and pension obligations as agreed between the parties. In terms of listing out his achievements, they're giving him a lengthy thank you for his service. That didn't happen. They simply say, Mr. Delaney served as CEO of the FAI between 05 to March 2019, during which time the FAI became partners in the new Aviva Stadium, 2017, though it should be 2019. He was elected to the UEFA Executive. Sorry, they have that right. In 2017, he was elected to the UEFA Executive. And then in March of this year, he moved to a role of Executive Vice President of the FAI. Both parties, the final line, both parties have agreed to make no further comment. So that came through after 11 o'clock on Saturday. Even that, right. So I'm going to play devil's advocate at points and be fair to the FAI, especially when we talk about the reasons they had to pay him off. But even that statement and the FAI have been espousing their newfound virtues, efforts and transparency. This was Gibraltar, meet your new executive vice president, late night, all over again. Do they think this is clever? Do they think people like this kind of behaviour? Do they think it's becoming of the organisation that they're trying to become? Are they completely ignorant of how the timing of the post-Gibraltar match statement was greeted and interpreted by everyone, even though in their own minutes they seem to think it might be a bit of a masterstroke?
They're going to come back, they're going to get things back to nil all.
Yes.
It's sort of surprising because you can't actually even get back to nil all if you've gone behind in a game.
Correct. So did they think this worked out so well before that we should do this again? This is the type of new era that we want to be a part of. Even that was just a very odd choice. That Saturday.
Yeah.
Is there any mitigating reason why they might have done it?
It would appear, and this is sort of more than one source, I guess, in the sense that that it's possible, and I don't think people are going to believe this story no matter what people say, because of the past examples where it was clearly a ploy and a strategy to, like, you know, throw something out late to try and sort of throw Sundays off the scent. The view that has been put forward is that actually the talks they were nearly completed on Friday and they did go through Saturday, and that there was a genuine timing issue with this, i.e. that things only did get finished up late enough on Saturday night, and this is what happened. Now, you can look at me with sort of a semi-skeptical face, and like when I've heard that was my instincts as well. But you know, people are saying that who would sort of have a knowledge of things that were happening. So you can make of it what you will. You know, if it was done on Saturday night, would you want to get it out? I mean, you still know. By sending it out at 11:15, let's say things were wrapped up at 10 to 11 on Saturday evening, which is, I think, the suggestion that there might have been something like that. Would you think, well, actually, you know, it's late on Saturday night. We might have got a couple of queries about something. Will we do it in the morning? You know, at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and time it around the news at 1 or whatever it might be. And clearly the decision was made, well, no, let's put out this statement now and that's it. So I think, you know what an 11:15 p.m. Saturday statement means. It's like it's sleepy time in the week, and the Sunday papers have early print deadlines. That'd be very well known in the business as such. But there is a suggestion that the talks did follow along those lines. I met inquiries 10 days ago or so to see where things stood with Delaney. And at that point, there was a suggestion that talks were going on, but that it could take a while. There was an impasse, you know. And I'm still a bit surprised that it's happened that quickly from then. But, people are saying that that was just an unfortunate coincidence. But they probably haven't earned. There's an element of not earning the belief of people on that one because of the past experience where it was definitely a strategy.
What do we know about the size of the payout, and what do we know about the nature of negotiations? I presume both sides were lawyered up here.
Yeah, and you go back to April, and that day we were in that, it was the Carlton Hotel, I think, at Dublin Airport, and there was, John Delaney was up in the room with members of the FBI board. I think there was like a subcommittee board and then the board itself. And that was the day there was a lot going on, people leaving through back exits and side exits, and there was lawyers and people in the building. And actually, that previous weekend, there'd been suggestions, strong suggestions that, you know, they'd been close to a deal. I think even, this is like something like Friday, April the 12th or something like that, you know, or that sort of time frame, that there was nearly an agreement then. And
he was put on guardian leave 3 days later.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah, that 15th. Monday, 15th. Yeah, okay, then, yeah, it was around that time. That weekend, there was certainly, at one point, there was strong rumour that he was gone, whether that meant showing the door or you know, a settlement. And then I think there was advice that came in late to the FBI that you need to think about your actions here. This could be tricky and this could be complicated. And I think that hasn't really changed. And I think the slight frustration would be maybe that, like, John Delaney was paid for 5 months while on gardening leave.
40,000 a month.
Yeah. And, you know, does the difference between the settlement then and now, how does that weigh up against the difference between that 5 months pay if you do your sums? I think it's like 175 grand or something as a figure you could make a rough estimate of that wages you might have accrued during that period. What the settlement this time? There's conflicting figures on the statement. I've heard sort of around that 350 grand territory, maybe a small bit more.
Emma Malone was reporting 500.
There's 500. I mean, there's different figures. I think the Sun, who've been very good throughout this, had 450. So there's different figures going around the place. People have heard I've heard different things. I've heard maybe on that 350, 400 end of the scale, the 350, to be honest, is what I'd heard. But different figures doing the rounds. Either way.
So you've heard 350, the Sun have heard 450, Emma Malone's heard 500.
Yeah, it's that ballpark. And I think, you know, it's probably cost the FBI around $500,000 either way, because he would have accrued that 175 in wages during that period. But the massive element of that would have been like pension entitlements. And that was the biggest thing here. It wasn't so much like, you know, people have been through a process of like statutory payments or stuff like that. It was very much like pension entitlements, and money had been paid into a pot over a long period of time for a very highly paid employee since 2005. And that was the biggest complication. And ultimately, you asked me, I didn't really answer the question in terms of, you know, what's been happening since or what's the situation, that in recent weeks, ultimately, they've had discussions where it's become clear that this impasse is set to continue over a long period, in that John Delaney has a defence and his team have a defence of his time there along the lines of, well, things that he did that might come out in subsequent financial reviews, and he got approval for it from the right officers and the right people and so on. The FBI might take a different view, but I don't think it's black and white. A lot of people say, well, why don't they just come out and sack him? I think the equation, they came into a situation where there was an equation, there was a sum. Mm. And did they have the grounds to do that? It would appear that they didn't.
So the complicating factor here is that all the decisions he's made, right back to, even we'll touch on it in a few moments, the Vantage Club and the stadium, right through to any other ill-judged decisions, which I'm sure he will argue were for the good of the association.
Absolutely.
The complicating factor is that all of the decisions made were passed by the FAI board.
Yeah.
The board oversaw this, and that arguably weakens the case of the FAI when Donald Conway and Paul Cook, who's the new vice president, when they sat down to negotiate with Delaney's legal team. That legal team could turn around to Cook and Conway and say, your board looked at everything he did, including the 2021 €2 million loyalty bonus, and your board said, we agree.
That was signed off on by, you know, and now there's always been a dispute over that as to how many people were aware of the terms and conditions, and that raises a whole issue of, you know, in internal governance, which we know wasn't the best. You know, that's why they've had an entire governance review. But yeah, was Anthony going to come out? There's a Sport Ireland commissioned audit which looks into sort of financial payments and checks and balances, and the Mazars one, which I think it might be more thorough, but it was commissioned by the FBI internally. But that will expose probably that their practices could have been better. But, you know, people will talk about it, say the issues related to, you know, his credit card and expense payments and deals and stuff would have grated with people, and certainly caused, you know, when that information came out in the Sunday Times initially, that it caused massive damage, I think, to his standing with a lot of people around the country.
Yeah.
But he could still legitimately argue, it would appear, well, well, those terms and conditions were signed off on by here and by here and by here, these people here. So, like, that's why you're heading for an impasse. And the situation is, what's the better scenario here? Do you pay as much as it still
rankles
with people? Do you pay this substantial sum now? Or do you risk going into a sort of a lengthy court battle or employment procedure when already, as far as I know, the FEI's legal bill for the last, you know, since this crisis kicked, is getting to around 1.5 million mark. That's for everything, you know. So
does that include the report?
Yeah. So if you're on about, like, you're facing a scenario where you're talking like high-powered legal people would need to be involved in this, and they don't come cheap.
The senior counsel.
The game. So they needed a line under this. They needed this done. This was something that they needed fixed.
Yes.
And that's the price that they had to pay. And I completely appreciate. I'm not saying like this line that this is a great deal. That I think there's an FEI sort of, they want that out there as a thing. I still find it hard to use those words, but it was probably an understandable one.
Because I presume the people around the negotiating table would have a fair idea of what's in the reports, the first of which is going to be published next Monday.
The COSI one next Monday, the Sport Ireland commissioned one, yeah.
So everyone around the table knows potentially what's coming down the line here. Because I've heard it said, well, why not wait for the reports? And that might give you ammunition to take a dismissal case against John Delaney, for instance.
Hmm.
So clearly the FAI didn't feel there was enough in those reports, or maybe it's because the board have been complicit that they felt, well, we're just going to have to negotiate with John Delaney here and get this done regardless of what's coming around the corner. Now, those reports either way will prove what the right decision was, but you would have to say, in defence of the FAI contingent here, they would know or have a fair idea, we think, we presume, but who knows what's in those reports, and they still felt, let's just get this done. Let's part ways with John Delaney.
Yeah, that's what they had to do. And there was like a, with regard to say sponsors and UEFA as well. That would have been their view that also like the retention of John Delaney on the books was possibly an obstacle to other things being done. And I think it's all a sum here, and the cost of that, you know, the pros outweigh the cons, but it's still like, you know, it's still a con that is, I think, is very damaging in terms of the public perception.
What would the average wage be of an FAI employee?
I don't know, but I mean, there would be a lot of FAI employees at a lower level, you know, that they'd be in the 28, 30, 35 bracket.
Yeah.
Some of them back in the day would have been co-funded as well. They'd have certain partnerships, and some would still exist, but there'd be a lot of lowly paid employees in the FAI. There's been a high turnover of staff. That's obviously, you know, and particularly sort of entry level roles and stuff. So there's people that are not earning big money, and yeah, you look at the figures. I mean, there's a lot going on in Irish football at the moment. So you even look at 350, the lower end of it, you still end up thinking, what would 350 do? Or the 350 plus the 175 during his time, like, you know, I mean, the 6 million in his tenure in terms of wages.
Yeah.
I mean,
before
John Delaney's done very well out of Irish football.
Before expenses.
Like, you mean, like, he has done extremely well out of Irish football.
The next point I want to get to. So increasingly, different people are writing pieces. You wrote one over the weekend. Ken Early wrote one in the Irish Times today. Neil O'Riordan has written one. Paul Lennon, I saw you quote an anecdote, which is faintly believable, about a chauffeur meeting them off the flight to bring them to the airport. So the level of spending here in certain areas of the association was ridiculous, really, in some respects. Are the FAI on the brink here? Like, are they pretty much on the brink of insolvency? Because it seems UEFA are set to loan them anything up to, and you can correct me on the figure, but I've read anything up to 20 million.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Conway has previously confirmed, I think, that, you know, a figure of 10 to 12 million within a one calendar year period is very feasible. But of course, there's no suggestion that this is all going to be within 1 year, you know, that it's going to be ongoing support. I don't think it's a case of, you know, here you go now. Like, there's advance payments being brought forward from deals and other funding arrangements that I don't think anyone has put a firm final figure on it. I mean, at times I've tried to get that figure off people and they didn't actually just know. And to answer your question, your initial question, without UEFA support, would the FAI be in a form, would there be insolvent? This is opinion, but I'd say it's probably informed enough opinion that I think there's a very good chance they would be in that position. Yes, they would. So
this is ridiculous.
So, I mean, it's an incredible legacy to leave when you consider that if none of this had come out, We would probably have had an AGM this year where we would have been told that the FAI would be debt free next year. There might have been a plan to persevere and press ahead with that target, which would have involved bringing forward funding and other payments. And so I know other costs have come out, you know, because of this, but ultimately it was always delaying.
Yeah.
The suspicions that were held about the true financial picture. And we are told in November, when the FAI AGM was adjourned and will reopen in November with the business of the accounts, we are told that we will get a pretty grim picture of the FAI finances and where we stand. And I mean, people from talking about being debt-free in 2020, it has been conceded that it could be 2030. And that wasn't even a by 2030, definitely, maybe less. Like, this is what we're looking at. It's another restructuring of debt. So, you know, a stadium that was launched in 2008, opened in 2010, that by, and it was supposed to be like providing a pension to Irish football from 2020 onwards, is still going to be a source and subject of debt in 2030, maybe 2035. Amazingly, there are still sort of people who would go around and suggest that, and I was sort of writing about this in the piece today, having heard John O'Regan from Kerry talking this morning, would suggest that that John Delaney delivering the Aviva Stadium is one of his great achievements, as though that Irish football without one man could never have found a solution of a stadium, you know, in partnership with the government and the IRFU.
Yeah.
That's just something that...
It's where we've managed to conjure the Aviva in a third world country.
How has everyone lost their confidence so much that they don't actually realise that football in this country is played by a lot of people and, you know, has a massive attraction to a lot of people, and that somehow, if it wasn't for one man's skill, no money or funding or anything would have come to the game. It's when you sit back and just and look at that, it's frankly, it's like ludicrous.
Yeah.
And amazingly, the FA will continue to get sponsors now.
Yeah.
They will survive eventually.
It's incredibly grim. It's a scandal that's where we are.
Yep.
We'll come back to it on the football show, though, not in huge debt. No pun intended, in huge debt. Because...
Everyone has debt.
Yeah. There's other things going on, and Pat Nevin will join us, but we'll pick at the bones of that and just tie a bow on it for now on the football show after nine. In the meantime, I should let you know, October 15th, we're in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre for what will be the week of the quarterfinals. You presume Ireland will be there. We'll have Michael Lynott, we'll have Brian O'Driscoll, we'll have Keith Wood, we'll have Paul Howard, we'll have Malcolm O'Kelly, we'll have Danny O'Reilly from the Croners, and the King of Love Island himself, Greg O'Shea, all in situ. Offtheball.com/events is where you go for tickets. All in association with Heineken, official worldwide partner to Rugby World Cup Japan 2019. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.